Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. As the weather turns across South Dakota, now might be the perfect time to cozy up with a good book, maybe even a cozy mystery novel. Authors Rosemarie Ross and Mary Angela join us today in the Sioux Falls studio ahead of a November 30th presentation at the downtown branch of the Siouxland Libraries. You can see them from 3 to 4 p.m. this Saturday. Mary Angela's new release is called Coming Up Murder, set in the fictional town of Copper Bluff, South Dakota. Professor Emmeline Prather is set to take in the delights of a Shakespeare festival in her quaint college town. But a graduate student shakes up the spotlight with accusations about the bard's true identity. Who might have been upset enough at his revelations to want him silenced permanently? Rosemarie Ross introduces a new detective in Cobblered to Death. Courtney Archer plays the quintessential farmer's daughter on her popular cooking show, but the weight of her urban upbringing means she has to hide who she really is from her fans. The chance to film a high-stakes cooking competition brings hope for a new, more authentic persona. But when one of the contestants is bludgeoned by her own cast-iron pan, bubbling with cherry cobbler, Courtney goes from the star of the show to person of interest. Can Courtney clear her name by figuring out the drama on camera and behind the scenes? Or will her curiosity end her career and her life? The authors are both here with us today, Mary Angela and Rosemarie Ross. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
What a fun, a delightful read these both were for me. So let's talk a little bit about what a cozy mystery is in the first place. Is that a descriptor that, you know, how can kind of people get their minds around this notion of cozy mystery? Mary?
A cozy mystery is a classic whodunit. And so there isn't a lot of graphic violence. The murder takes place off camera. And there isn't a lot of swearing in cozy mysteries or any of that. And so really the primary focus is just the mystery itself. You might have some subplots or some romance, but it's basically the question is who committed the act of murder or who committed the crime or whatever it may be in the plot. So that's basically the focus of the cozy mysteries. And sometimes there might be a craft associated with it or a recipe or some other theme that it...
You get to do whatever you want.
Right.
But we as readers like to go and so there's a sense to it that just says, okay, I'm not going to be too traumatized by some graphic, gory violence. Maybe is that kind of, Rosemarie, how you sort of see from a reader's perspective?
Yes. Yeah. There's no graphic, and usually the sleuth is an amateur sleuth.
Okay.
They're not a trained professional. Now, there are some where they're private eyes, but most of the time in cozy mysteries, it's an amateur sleuth that needs to clear their name, and then from there, they just are always involved in the mystery and trying to get down to what actually happened and not the topical explanation what happened.
Which kind of makes it feel like it's every man. It's all of us.
Right.
It's the sort of things that we start trying to figure out and then get ourselves in too deep, but we don't really in real life because it would actually be dangerous.
Right. We would probably be arrested.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about these books and some of the settings that you chose, because Mary, I mean, this is a very familiar setting to people in South Dakota. There's a whole lot of nods to a certain South Dakota college town.
There is. You noticed that. Yeah, definitely. Copper Bluff is a fictional town in South Dakota, but I'm thrilled to have this series set in South Dakota, and actually my next series is also set in South Dakota. But it's based a lot on my own time in Vermilion, South Dakota, and my time at the University of South Dakota. And so a lot of that setting is drawn from my time there on campus.
There is a Shakespeare garden. The First Folio comes to town. There's a Shakespeare festival.
Yes.
They go to a bar called Harry's. And there's a music museum, a Harmony Music Museum.
Yes, yes. Lots of similarities.
Yeah. That feels really validating, though,
yeah,
when you're from South Dakota to sort of have that inside track to, and certainly helped me visualize the Shakespeare garden.
Right, right. No, I think it's so much fun because you do see some of those familiar sites that are based on USD. But I've also had people from Augustana and from SDSU tell me, that they have thought that it was based on their town too. So I think that a lot of it anybody who went to a small college campus might be able to see themselves, you know, there.
Right. And there's a lot of academic intrigue as well, in the sense that this is a woman who has a career, who has career challenges, who has relationship challenges, who has neighbors, who has... A mystery isn't worth its weight unless there's a great character driving the story. Tell us a little bit about Emmeline.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that mysteries, they're all about plot and whodunit. But you need to have that character arc, especially in a series where they're changing and growing. And Emmeline is such a neat character to me because she's a little bit of a romantic. She's kind of quirky. She's really smart. She's just like so many professors I had the privilege to study under, honestly, because a lot of people will ask me to, you know, Emmeline, who is she? Where did you come up with this character idea? And really, she is such a compilation of those neat, fun professors that I had the privilege of working under and just had a wonderful time at USD. So she's kind of a combination of that.
She's not afraid to wear some kicky shoes.
No, yeah. She likes her shoes and she'll look at her older professors and see all the things that they're doing or wearing and their sort of tattered jackets or blazers with the elbow patches and things, and she's got her little cheetah sandals on and she knows this is different and she's a little bit younger than some of her colleagues, right. But it makes it fun because she admires those.
Right. She's uniquely in herself in this world, kind of navigating it. And Rosemary, tell me about Courtney Archer, because she's, she's taking on a persona, but she's really an interesting person without that persona as well, especially because I love this little, it's not a quirk, it's this passion that she has of carving fruit into objects, which she never gets to show to the world because that's not the farmer's daughter kind of thing to do. How does Courtney Archer end up being the farmer's daughter and having to really hide her actual upbringing?
Well, what happened for her is when she graduated culinary school, the job that she got out of school was for a grocery store chain where she went around making food using whatever they had on sale, because that was her job. And that's where producer Eric Iverson discovered her. And the show that he pitched to the network was A Farmer's Daughter. They needed to fill a spot. So then she couldn't use her chef skills, like food carving, because she was known as a persona. That's what sold the show, was the persona of the farmer's daughter to fill a demographic.
Yeah. There's so much in both of these books, I want to talk about Courtney for a little bit, where women get put in, they're in a profession and their expectations of that profession, that these women are either, you know, celebrating and all in for, or kind of rallying against and trying to figure out how to be their authentic selves within this profession. You know, it's obvious that we all want to go behind the scenes of the cooking show, right?
Right.
So is that what you wanted to do as an author, too, is you wanted to take people that had to be a fascinating thing to research?
I did. And, you know, headlines tell us a lot of things. There's been celebrity chefs that get in trouble because their on-air persona seems so sweet and nice and wonderful. And in their real life, they're not at all the person that they're portrayed on television. And that's where I took that idea of have her be a city girl, but she's posing as a country girl. And we all know that in our world, if you're making money, you have to keep up the front. Yeah. And that's what she has to do because her show is popular and she has to keep pretending she's a farmer's daughter.
Which means she already has a secret as this sort of this murder unfolds, which makes things a little bit difficult for her to navigate because people are getting an idea that she has a secret. Talk to us about plotting. Let's talk about plotting a murder mystery and have no idea how to begin. Do you begin at the beginning, the end, with character, with? Tell us a little bit about the process of writing a mystery and crafting it.
For me, I had a book that I went by, and it showed you should do it in three acts, with your first chapter as your beginning introduction and your last chapter as the wrap-up chapter, where it's solved and we're moving on. and you're going to see what the character gets to do next for hopefully the next book. And so that's what I break mine down into, three acts. So the stakes have to get higher through the second act, and then you have to start wrapping it up in the third act. You have to start showing that some of those red herrings that people may have thought was clues were in fact nothing.
I know, I'm ready to slam my fist on the table and announce what some of those were. I want to ruin it. I don't want to ruin it for readers, but I will say that, I mean, I didn't think about the structure of the book while I was reading it. I was just reading for enjoyment. And now that you say that, I was almost surprised. And I was like, oh, of course Rosemary Ross had a structure to it. And of course, it was seamless and I didn't see it. So Mary, tell us a little bit about your process and weaving in those hints and clues and deceptions as well.
Mm-hmm. I always know who the killer is, at the beginning of the novel. And so I have that. I also use an outline. And this is something that I probably started doing with my third book, I think, started using an outline. And it was just because more material was becoming due at publishers. And so you have to write your synopsis and send that in. And I noticed that when I had to do that and ended up outlining the book and writing the synopsis first, it was nice having that to fall back on. A little bit and have that planning done. And I ended up rewriting less because of that. So right now that's where I'm at. I have that outline and I loosely outline my books before I write them. I always know who the killer is, and that's been with every book that I've ever written. But I do like to place a lot of clues throughout. I think, whenever you answer one question, you sort of have to ask another question to keep the reader's interest piqued. And that's what I try to do and sprinkle those clues out so that it's not, so that it's possible that if a reader is paying attention, they might be able to find out who the killer is or have some ideas of who the killer is. I never want to just, come out with someone at the end of the book who just you haven't seen for the last 250 pages or something like that.
Right.
So I like clues and I like to sprinkle them out and be fair with the reader too.
You must have delightful relationships with your readers because, again, I want to ruin it for anybody who's listening, but I would love to tell you right now, like, who I thought it was, and why. And you'd probably look at me like, what? So do you get readers who shock you that you think, well, how in the world did they get that? Because that was never your intention. As people sort of, because I think when you read a mystery novel, one of the things that you might like to do is to, to try to figure it out. I mean, what do you find mystery readers really, do they do that with you? Come back and say something, kind of off the wall that they thought before the whodunit was revealed?
I have not had that happen. I've had some reviews.
Yet, as soon as we're off mic.
No, as soon as we're off mic. I've had some reviewers say, and one of them was a good friend of mine who writes suspense, that they had to keep paging back through the book to try to figure out who it was. Because once they thought they knew, and then it was revealed that was not the person, they were trying to go back to look for the clues to find where that clue was. And I do try to be subtle and have it in some kind of just basic conversation or every, kind of action or something like that. And so I've had two or three people say that they didn't know who it was until the very end and that they had to page back to try to find out where that clue was that would have told them.
And really, even if you did have an idea, it was still a pretty good read. I mean, you're still enjoying the book, and that has to be part of, it's not a, it's not an outline. It's a novel, and therefore it has to be well-crafted and, mm-hmm. put together.
And I write for people to enjoy reading. So from what you just said, it's true. Even if you figure it out, I just want them to have a good time while they're reading. We have such a busy world that if they can just take a minute and enjoy themselves, that's all I ask.
We will take a minute to take a break, and we'll be back with more with these two South Dakota mystery authors in a moment on listener-supported SDPB Radio. Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. We're talking about two new cozy mystery stories by two wonderful South Dakota authors. We have Mary Angela and Rosemary Ross in the Studio Mary's book, which just came out in November. It's called Coming Up Murder, and Rosemary Ross's Cobblered to Death is released today.
Today.
All right. There's like a couple copies at Barnes & Noble right now that you signed.
They are. That's
right.
True.
So go before they sell out right
That's
now.
That's right.
They're in their car already. They're listening to, they're having this driveway moment. They're in the parking spot at Barnes & Noble. They're going to go in and pick up a copy. I know they are. All right. Let's talk a little bit about, I want to talk with you, Rosemary, about female friendships with both of you, because that was another thing I really found in this book, that, you know, she meets this friend and you see how women communicate, women connect. Is that important to you, that Courtney had a friend that she could trust?
Right. Yes.
Away? Yeah.
Yes, it is, because I do think women should have best friends that support each other. I've had reviewers tell me that her friend Shannon is more interesting than she is, and that is not what I intended, but I wanted to show that sometimes women can meet each other and make a connection, and they have instant support, and that Courtney actually has someone who supports her no matter what, even when she has to tell her the truth.
Right.
Because Shannon is also mistaken about Courtney's background, and that bothers Courtney a lot. So she makes the decision that the friendship is more important than the secret.
Yeah.
Spoiler. But she makes that decision. And I think that's important, because I think we all have one or two people in our lives that we feel that way about.
Right. We don't know how everybody else is going to, how everything is going to fall out. But we do have a sense of security with Shannon, you know, throughout the book, I think, that, you know, was intentional. And I found kind of comforting and a place of solidness in a world that, I mean, she's taking, I mean, this is a closed set. They can't get off the premises.
Right.
There's this cooking competition going. You don't know who anybody is, if they're even who they say they are. There are facades and, you know, TV personas, and, you know, somebody looks polished here, and then you see him, he's all disheveled. So there's a sense of not knowing who or what to trust, what's real and what's pretend, what food tastes good and what food doesn't. And then there's Shannon. And
right.
Yeah, I really appreciated that. And then, Mary, one of the things I really gravitated to in your book, Coming Up Murder, also was this this book that Emmeline is writing, and mm-hmm. how she's having her own struggles as a female academic. What can you tell us without, you know, ruining too much of just mm-hmm. of how hard it is for her to get her book in the world and not have it look like a cliche?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's something, actually one of my readers wrote in a couple of years ago, and he said, don't forget about that book that she's working on, because I would like to see what happens with her press and all the struggles that occur when you try to publish a book. And that seed was planted right when I got that email, and I thought about it for many times before I wrote that kind of subplot into Coming Up Murder. But yeah, there are a lot of stereotypes that she's trying to fight against. She has, you know, her cover has, you know, some flowers on it that she doesn't want, and just some kind of cutesy things that she's, trying to fight against or really trying to
she's trying to be taken seriously,
right?
Because
her subject,
yeah, yes. Determined to not take her seriously.
Yes, exactly. Because her subject is definitely more serious and more academic, and yet she's trying to fight against these cliches, as you said. So it was kind of a fun subplot to explore and work with in this book.
Do you find that, and you mentioned somebody sending an email to talk a little bit about your relationships with your readers, and I think especially with mystery authors, people feel like they want to give you some ideas, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes, I think people like to do that anyway.
Yeah. But, right.
But yes, I think they do like to give you ideas, or they tell you who their favorite character in the book, not necessarily author. A lot of times people say to me, Cozy Mystery, and I go, Murder, She Wrote. And then everyone knows what you're talking about. And then they say, I love Jessica Fletcher, because they identify with that character.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that's all we can all hope for. So they will say things like, why don't you write something like that? Why don't you write something like Jessica Fletcher? And it's like, well, I'm trying.
Maybe they haven't read the book yet when they say that. But, and they also have to, like, come up with, like, you know, what if... this is the murder weapon, something that you have. Do you get ideas from, like, you know, crimes that people, like, share? Here's what I'm really getting at. Are you, like, low-key obsessed with crime as you search for your next?
You know, I'm not, like, scary crime because it's frightening to me that people could be, as some serial killers are.
Right.
But more lightweight crime that you read about and you think, what were they thinking? You know, like the people who rob a bank, but they give a telephone number or something and then they wonder how they got tracked down so fast.
Right. Yeah.
You know, they give their real identity, those kind of things.
Mary?
Yeah, I think you always have readers, and like the one I mentioned, you know, they'll come up with ideas or they'll talk to you about characters. Mrs. Gunderson is sort of a side character that at the beginning of the series, she and Emmeline really had some struggles as neighbors, but by the fourth book, they're quite close, and so it's fun to see how those characters change. And but I've had people say you should kill Mrs. Gunderson and have M solve her murder. My daughter Maisie actually said that she thought that Emmeline should get murdered and Lenny should try to solve her death. And so, yeah,
I disagree strongly with both those sentiments. So.
Yeah, I couldn't do either of those, but
you can't kill your main character.
No, you can't. I don't think a publisher would
legit
go for that.
You cannot kill Mrs. Gunderson either.
But it's just so fun to think of how involved they get with your characters, just like you do, you know, coming up with ideas for what they can do. And
you talk about this a little bit with the Shakespeare connection and the tragedies that Shakespeare wrote about in his plays, and why do you know Emmeline is answering this question, which is my question for both of you, which is why are we so fascinated with murder mysteries and with these life and death, you know, sort of human dramas? Why would someone do that? How do people figure it out and solve it? You know, people have been writing murder mysteries that people gobble up for a long time. You're part of a pretty impressive tradition.
I think people like to solve puzzles.
Puzzles, yeah.
You know, our mind, we're curious. People are curious. And so they like to hear part of the situation and try to solve it themselves because we all like to solve puzzles. And I think that's some of the draw to it, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think the amateur sleuth, too, does put you in the driver's seat. And so you get to imagine, you know, not being a professional or a PI or a officer, just being an amateur sleuth, it puts the reader right in that seat to imagine, well, what if you owned a little store, or what if you were in a baking show or were a professor and you had to solve this crime? And so I think that it's about the puzzle, like Rosemary said, but it's also about being that character for that short amount of time that you're reading and imagining yourself doing these things.
And they always just go a step too far and end up at risk themselves, which hopefully we do not do.
Right.
Yeah. Is that fun for you?
It is fun for me to put a character in danger. I would never put myself in danger. Right. I just wouldn't. It's not. Yeah. I'm a self-protective person, and so it's fun to put the character in danger, but I would never want to be in her shoes.
You're so genteel. And then your eyes spark and say, I love that. Mary, do you like sort of putting her at risk a little? Because she's at risk in this book.
I do. And I like writing those scenes where she's just kind of on the edge of something, or she's at the edge of, you know, peril, and she has to figure out a way out of this. And so I love that. It keeps it interesting while you're writing, and you know, interesting for the readers too as they read.
I love that in both stories, you know, as they go through these sort of traumatic events in their lives, you know, that they both are connected and have romantic feelings for someone else, because that would not be me. there's no way I'd be looking at any, you know, romance during, you know, fear that I'm going to get murdered.
But it is a popular theme in cozy mysteries, though, to have more than one romantic interest so that there's a love triangle.
As a reader, I found it, you know, comforting. And again, another, you know, to pull you through in the plot. As a person, I'd have left that show. Nobody would have been able to stop. Did you research behind the scenes and how cooking shows work?
I did. I did internet research on it. I found interviews with contestants who had been on.
Yeah.
baking competitions, and because they're weekly shows, you think they're done weekly, and they're not. They're shot in sequence, so they may be on the set for 2 weeks or however long it takes them to either continue on or be taken off. But it's all shot in a two-week time frame, most of them. Mm-hmm. It's yeah. Even some of the weekly shows are shot more segments than
sure.
a weekly segment, so...
Right. All right, tell us a little bit about Saturday's event at the library.
Well, we are going to be talking to Jane Healy, our wonderful downtown librarian, about our books. She's going to be interviewing both of us and just talking a little bit about them, and then we'll have the opportunity to, our readers will have the opportunity to purchase books and have them signed, and Zambrose will be down there to coordinate that.
Right. Yeah. And there will be a question and answer time for the audience to ask us, whether they're readers or writers. It's a good opportunity for either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And again, Zambrose will be selling books, and everybody needs to remember it's Small Business Saturday.
That's a
good way to support a small business.
And tell us a little bit for the writers, other people who want to get involved in writing mysteries, what is some of your top advice?
You need to educate yourself on the genre you want to write by reading books, by taking online courses or in-person courses if someone offers them near you, and believe what people are telling you, and you have to persevere.
Mm.
Publishing is a tough business.
And that's coming from someone who's cracked it. We could talk for about 5 minutes about how many books and articles and things that you have published in different genres. You know how to do it, and even you say it is tough
and be persistent.
Mary, some of the best advice for wannabe mystery mm-hmm. authors.
I think, too, learning about the business of publishing just by joining organizations like Mystery Writers of America or Authors Guild, any of those organizations where you can learn from people who do have experience before you go out there and try it on your own.
All right. The books are Cobbled to Death and Coming Up Murder, and you can pick up your copies and have them signed by the authors this Saturday, November 30th. At 3 p.m. Central Time at the Downtown Siouxland Libraries. And Jane will be
a
great interviewer as well. So that's going to be a delightful event.
Yes.
Rosemarie Ross and Mary Angela, thank you so much for being here. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.